I find this most often with experienced entrepreneurs, executives, and they always have to preface of what they've done before. They have to give me their credentials, not just personally, but if they're pitching the same thing. And you know what? It's one of the great mysteries. The more you do that, the less credibility you have. The more that you have to go on about how great you were in your past life, because that has a half-life of about 10 minutes. And a new venture. It's good to open a few doors, but if you start to have to tell me how great you are before I discover it, it's going to work against you.
Hello, and welcome to 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, where we dispense wisdom to an international audience of rising leaders. My name is Diana White, and I'm your host. This podcast is sponsored by the Professional Development Forum, which helps diverse young professionals of any age accelerate their performance in the modern workplace. On this podcast, you'll hear honest, practical advice that you cannot learn from a textbook. Today's guest is Dr. CJ Cornell. CJ has done many things during his career, but one thing is for sure, CJ Cornell lives and breathes entrepreneurship. Over the past 25 years, he's been a serial entrepreneur, a venture capitalist, an engineer, a scientist, a professor, a mentor, and an author. Along the way, he put himself through school by being a stand-up comedian and a sleight-of-hand magician. He majored in nuclear engineering and later worked on the first space shuttle. But soon he found his real calling was in starting and growing new ventures. CJ was the founder and CEO of six high-tech ventures that attracted over $250 million in funding and had three successful exits. He's created and launched over 25 consumer and business products that have earned more than $3 billion in revenues. Somewhere during his journey, he earned his PhD in economics and became a professor of entrepreneurship at Arizona State University, where he helped establish their award-winning entrepreneurship program. Dr. Cornell sits on the board of half a dozen high-tech companies and works closely with the Arizona Commerce Authority as a mentor and a coach for their Venture Ready program and Virtual Accelerator program. These days, CJ gives over 40 speeches, workshops, seminars each year, and does a lot of writing on subjects of entrepreneurship, innovation, cutting-edge technologies. He is also the co-author of a textbook on entrepreneurship, and his blog is ranked in the top 50 most influential websites for entrepreneurs and startups. CJ's most recent Amazon bestseller is called The Age of Metapreneurship, A Journey into the Future of Entrepreneurship. And his newest book, The Startup Brain Trust, all about startup mentors and mentorship, will be available for pre-ordering this spring. Welcome, CJ.
Thank you, Diana. Great to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
I am so happy to have you here. Long time in the making, too. I've been stalking you for a while now. Very busy man, very busy man. So we're going to kick this off before we get to your lessons. And we're going to do something a little bit different and fun with your lessons today. But before we get to that, what would you tell your 30-year-old self?
Oh, lots of things. I've thought about that a lot. Let me say, number one, Becky really didn't like you. I would tell that. The other one is, as you go forward in life, people are going to be really important to get done what you need to get done. And that's important. However, they're never going to be as motivated as you when they're helping you with your own venture or your own ideas. And keep that in mind, that they're never, ever going to be as motivated as you until they're going to be working on their own venture or their own idea. Otherwise, if you don't have that expectation, things are not going to turn out well. But if you do have that expectation, everything turns out great.
And I would imagine, you know, you probably started in your career of these companies probably in the 30s. And if you had some people around you that you were saying, hey, I've got this great idea, follow me, let's do this. Did you have a lot of concerns with them saying, I'm young, I don't take this as seriously as you do?
It took a couple of ventures to get better at it, but if your vision is compelling enough and you're articulate enough at it, there'll be people excited and they'll find their place in that vision. And they'll say, you know what, I want to be a part of this, and this is the part I want. Instead of you telling them, you know, I want you to build this for me or something like that. So it takes time to get good at that, to be, I always tell entrepreneurs to try to be the Steve Jobs of your small niche, whatever it is, so that the people will hear about you who want to belong to that kind of technology or venture. They'll find you, and instead of you begging for help, they'll say, I want to help. I see how I can help.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So now this is in keeping kind of with your book coming out. We're going to be basing your lessons today. We've got 10 lessons, but we're basing it off of 8 simple rules. And I want you to talk about that because I remember it, but I don't know if our listeners know about this. So tell us what we're in for today.
Well, you know, before that TV show that people remember, 8 Simple Rules, there was an article and a book by an author whose name escapes me at a moment because his claim to fame was a movie called The Dog's Purpose, if you're a dog lover. But he wrote something called 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. And it was a very blunt, humorous, slightly caustic warning to teenage boys dating his daughter. And I've always remembered that. And I've been mentoring for, I actually looked it up, since about 2001, 2002. So you do the math. And as an entrepreneur and a former entrepreneur, I really do want to help entrepreneurs. But mentoring entrepreneurs is a little different because they don't just need encouragement. They do need honesty and maybe even a little bit of tough love. And a lot of entrepreneurs are so caught up in their vision that they forget the simple rules of life. And a lot of mentors encounter this in their lives. So there was a one point I just got frustrated and I typed out these 8 simple rules, which are a little bit sarcastic to drive the point home.
I love it. And so we're going to go over those. We got 10 simple rules for engaging with your mentor. Right. And I think that this is a really funny and wonderful spin on that process, because a lot of young founders and entrepreneurs, you're so right. They're so caught up in their own thing. They're so caught up in their own world, and they're caught up in how much help, how many resources can I get, that they don't take into consideration the etiquette and how it needs to be a little bit reciprocal. And so I love this. So let's get into lesson number one, or rule number one, right? Be upfront. Are you really just looking for a hookup, eye candy, or a sugar daddy? I'm going to laugh through each of these, by the way.
A quick word before I start. It's not just young entrepreneurs.
True.
It's almost any new entrepreneur, and maybe even older ones, or rather seasoned ones, because once you get an idea and you get excited about it, it just takes over your personality.
It does.
And it's a good thing, but you have to stay grounded. So the first one, yes, is be upfront. Remember, this is inspired by the dating analogy. And, you know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs who knock on the door of a mentor, and what they really want is an investor. What they really want is someone just to give them quick advice and then be on their way. Okay. And that can be fine if you're upfront about it. But there's nothing more annoying than going through 2 hours meeting with somebody, and then at the end of that mentoring session, they ask you for investment or introduction to investors. And it's like, well, if you had been upfront in the beginning, I could have approached this differently and saved us both time.
Makes sense. It really does. Number two, and again, Dr. Cornell, I'm so sorry, but I'm going to laugh through each one of these. Number two, don't ask me how to lose 20 pounds the night before the prom.
As I wrote, I cannot undo the last 12 months of your mistakes, and neither can you. And if you need miracles, call a faith healer. it's amazing how many people wait until it's too late to ask for help or ask for advice. And sometimes it's like somebody who gained 20 pounds. Well, yeah, it's going to take time, though, to undo what you did or unlearn what you did. And so there are so many that come to you when they have $10 left in their bank account and, you know, they can't go on, or some disaster has happened and they could have taken care of it a little sooner. And I understand, you know, why one would do this. And it's not relegated just to entrepreneurs. I think a lot of people do this when asking for advice, but entrepreneurs seem to do this so often. You know, it's like, well, you know, I need to hire people. Well, what happened? Well, you know, 30 people just quit last night. And it's like, well, I can't undo that. There were some fundamental problems that you should have handled 6 months ago.
So true. CJ, do you find that some of these problems stem from not doing the right research or the best SWOT and feasibility analysis in the first place by these founders? Can that be a factor sometimes?
It could be. It's just that entrepreneurship is its own animal. It's very intensive. You've got to juggle a lot of balls. And so sometimes these things are bound to happen. Maybe you're hoping for things to get better or go away, but I think it's just the nature of the beast. And, you know, if you're an entrepreneur where everything goes smoothly, while I envy that, I also have to question if you're taking enough risk, if you're moving fast enough.
Oh, wow. So I need you to repeat that because that's amazing. If things are going smoothly, that could be a good sign, but it also says what, maybe?
Oh, yes. If things are going too smoothly, it might be a sign that you're too methodical about it, moving too slowly, or not taking enough risks.
Oh, that's a bumper sticker. That's a bumper sticker right there. So number three, don't play hard to get.
Yeah. So, you know, there are just so many entrepreneurs who, when they first describe their venture, you get the impression that it is much bigger than it is, or that they're doing much better than it is. It's only later that you understand that they're really struggling. In fact, everybody is struggling. I haven't met an entrepreneur yet. I'm sure Elon Musk sits back in his bed, you know, and thinks about the struggles he's going through. Don't try to hide that, because we want to help. All right? Everybody wants to help, but particularly the mentors want to help. And if you're evasive or you're positioning because you want to puff out your chest or so, I get it. It's marketing, but not to your mentor. We want to help. And it's going to take time for us to peel away that. And you know what? The experienced mentors will see right through it in the beginning. At first, it's comical, but if you keep it up, it just seems like you're being evasive and you're hiding something.
Makes sense. It really does. All right. Number four, if you have to tell me how great you are, you're not.
I find this most often with experienced entrepreneurs, executives who eventually become entrepreneurs. And they always have to preface of what they've done before. They have to give me their credentials, not just personally, but if they're pitching the same thing. And you know what? It's one of the great mysteries. The more you do that, the less credibility you have. The more that you have to go on about how great you were in your past life. You know what? Because that has a half-life of about 10 minutes in a new venture, right? It's good to open a few doors, but if you start to have to tell me how great you are before I discover it, it's going to work against you.
This is something that I've actually noticed. This is human nature. This is the nervous tick. This is the, I've got an opportunity of a lifetime in front of me, and I really don't want to botch it up. So let me puff up like a peacock and do whatever it takes. Do you have any advice for people to say, look at these warning signs, look at these triggers, if you have said this, or if you have done this, or, you know, my biggest thing is when I tell people when they're talking to someone else, watch their eyes. If their eyes start to glaze over a little bit, look at their feet. If their feet start to point outward, they want out. They want out of this conversation. So you have any tips on that?
Well, in this context, I will say two things. One, be honest in the sense of, we get that there's marketing, but when you're pitching to investors and particularly to mentors and coaches, take away all the window dressing and the sugarcoating, all that. So I'll give you, for instance, when I see a team that says, collectively, we have 200 years of experience in this field. I sort of get it, it's true and all that, but that's an example of trying to make it seem a lot more than it is. Or there are people who have had five failed ventures in their past, and really each one of them was John Doe and Associates, a one-person venture. There's nothing wrong with that, but if you try to make it seem like you're a serial entrepreneur or had more traction than you did, it's only going to work against you.
Yeah. I will tell you this. You know, one of the things that I respect about you so much, we travel in the same global entrepreneurship circles, right? And I remember when I was introducing you when we did an event together, and it was online. And I was regaling, you know, six ventures, all this stuff, amazing stuff. And you stopped me, and you were sure to make me point out they weren't all successful, Diana. Make sure you tell people that I had ventures, but they weren't all successful. And I just said, wow, who does that? That is novel.
Well, I also point out another thing, but for a different reason, is that I've had, you know, three exits, and one of them was over $1 billion, but I never saw most of that money, right? And that was a big lesson learned, but I want to make people understand that just because someone has a big event, a big success, doesn't mean that they reap the benefits of it. A lot of times there'll be an entrepreneur, this is consistent with what we're talking about, where, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, I was with Uber in the beginning, but they may have been, had no part in making them a success.
Right.
The credential is a little bit misleading, like you said, if you have to tell me how great you are.
You know what? I'd always wondered, why didn't you invite me on your private yacht? Well, now I know. All right, let's get to number five. Number five, have a thick skin. Your idea is not as good as you think it is. I think, yeah, I need to say that 50 times, but go ahead.
This is very common. I mean, I get it. You know, if you think you have a great idea, gosh, it's more dear to you than your children sometimes. And even after all this time, I have to walk on eggshells around entrepreneurs trying to give a reality check, if you will, on the idea. And this is tough because a lot of mentors and a lot of mentorship programs and entrepreneurship programs want to encourage an entrepreneur. And there's encouragement, but also there's kind of this false encouragement. If you go, oh, you know, great. And because you don't want to discourage somebody. And I get that. But on the other hand, when you're coming for mentorship or you really want to make a go of it, you need to give your idea some scrutiny. And you know what? For the cynical experience folks like myself, we've seen it all now. And we were mentioning before, if you're watching this on video, there's a pets.com sock puppet on a shelf above me. And for those who don't know, pets.com was one of the great dot-com crash and burn failures that they delivered pet food online. Now today, people find that extraordinarily useful. 20 years ago, unfortunately, it wasn't the right time. Maybe not the right execution, I don't know, but it crashed and burned. But it is still a great idea. It is a great idea, but it's an idea that needed some scrutiny to say, well, you know, people might like it, but they may not behave that way today. Well, all ideas can have that kind of scrutiny. Even Apple went through times, you know, Apple's had failed products. They had the Newton, right? And it took a tablet type device. And it failed horribly. It's a case study in MBA programs today, right? But it took another 10 years or more for the iPad to come out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're afraid to criticize it, you're not helping the entrepreneur. Anyway, no one likes having their idea criticized. You know, they get very defensive, but it's a gift. It's a gift because most people are too nice to criticize. At the very least, even if the criticism is not fair or not true, you get practice at diplomatically countering that. All right. If it is true, you think about it and you do something about it. And if it's nothing you can do about it, then you have a gift, something to think about, right? Something that you can do something about.
I love that attitude and approach. And this is a segue into number six. So lesson number five is telling you, hey, absorb that honesty, you know, make sure you surround yourself with people that will tell you the truth. But if you don't want to get that lesson, then lesson number six, here we go. If all you want is someone to rave about your idea, then call your mother. And then I'm going to add another little line that you put in here that I literally laughed for about 10 minutes straight, I think. If you merely want someone to agree with you, then adopt a parrot.
It's sad, but I'll say a good percentage of the entrepreneurs that I either meet or observe, because I'm in a position where, because of online mentorship, where there are a lot of virtual groups where there are entrepreneurs and a lot of mentors. And so I get to hear from entrepreneurs who I'm not necessarily mentoring as well. And, you know, frankly, when they're talking about their idea, they just want validation. They don't want to know what else they have to do to make it successful, or worse, what they have to do differently. It's important because they may have done things already. And to be told that your idea is not perfect, and I'm being nice, your idea is flawed, and you have to go and redo something. No one wants to hear that. I get it. But a lot of people need to hear it in a good way. Because, again, going back to one of the first rules is that, you know, if you're coming to me, it's usually because something's wrong, not because things are going right.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Someone once said, I don't know what the context was, but it was a lawyer. And, you know, we were just talking and they said, Diana, you know, a reason why people have such a bad feeling about lawyers. And I said, I don't know why. He says, because they wait until it's not salvageable. They wait until there's anger before they come and see us. If people came to us beforehand to say, hey, this is going on in my life, how do I legally structure it so that if things need to fall apart, it's in place. We don't have any bad feelings. If they did that, they'd hate us a little bit less. I almost think it's the same with entrepreneurship, mentorship, getting funding.
I'll add one that you just reminded me that I heard a long time ago about cars, automotive.
Yeah.
A lot of people will wait until it's too late or until something big is wrong, including myself, or, you know, until they hear the noise. And then even then they'll wait. Whereas a real expert in cars will open the hood and he's going to look for problems.
Right.
Problems. Right. For something that may go wrong. It's not wrong yet. Okay. And that way they don't have to, again, add it to lose 20 pounds a night before the prom or, you know, or go there when the oil has been out for 2 months and the engine is ready to explode.
CJ, you hit it on the nail. You really, really did. It's so true. And I'm trying to be more of that person, but I was that person like, hey, if I don't hear any bad noise, it's good. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Number 7, be smarter than me. Oh, you put a please in here. So I'm going to read that again. Please be smarter than me, at least about your own business. So talk to me about that one.
Yeah, I've always been amazed at this one. Even I spent a stint as a venture capital partner in Silicon Valley and wanting to be naively entrepreneur friendly. And so I got to vet or talk with a lot of entrepreneurs seeking funding. And it's amazing how many of them will enter into a market and start talking to people without fully just doing the research. And I don't mean like research in the university professor sort of way, but my goodness, you have Google. You can find out everything there ever was to know about something. And even in your field where there has been flawed attempts in the past, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it, but it does mean you should know about it. It does mean that you should know why, like again, pets.com. You know, if you're opening up a pets business, well, and I bring up pets.com, you should know about it and tell me why today it's different, right? Because I can't tell you many times while talking to an entrepreneur, I'm typing away, Googling the business, right? And finding out, and all of a sudden I know more than them only because I was willing to do that. And that affects their credibility. It really does, because that's free. That's something you should be doing all the time, is being the expert in your niche of the business. And it just always surprises me how many entrepreneurs don't do this.
And I think there's a percentage of entrepreneurs that, and I hope this goes viral, right? I hope so many entrepreneurs hear the lessons that you're giving us today, these rules, because so many of them have it backwards. So the first thing they have backwards is, oh my gosh, I need money. How can I get it? Let me start a business. When it should be, I want to start a business. I have a solution to a pain point. Let me save so that I can do this the right way. Almost in the same vein, it's they have an idea. They don't think, honestly, let me do as much research as I possibly can. They go to the mentor to say, tell me what to do. Tell me about this business. Tell me if it's viable. Tell me all these things. When really they should do their homework before they come to this person.
Well, in the upcoming book about mentorship, I use a couple of examples that are familiar to people about one of the most famous mentors, at least in film and movies. Actually, there are two, Yoda, of course, but everybody knows the Karate Kid. And
Mr. Miyagi?
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi, right? And that is one of the better examples. So in martial arts, there's a lot of examples of mentorship because that's sort of the mode of how martial arts is built around. And if you look at, let's say, jujitsu, of where it's, or Aikido, where it's you wait, you watch your opponent, and then you watch and learn, and then you wait till the right time. You just don't go diving in without knowing your opponent. Who would do that? All right. Well, somebody with a lot of energy and a lot of confidence, which unfortunately describes most entrepreneurs, that and you know what? A lot of times, yes, you can dive in with the confidence that goes along with ignorance. And yeah, sometimes there's an advantage of having a blind eye to all of the distractions. I get it. Because a lot of entrepreneurs, doesn't matter young or old, you start Googling and you find out, oh my God, you know, 300 people have the same idea as me in the past. And then you just get discouraged and you drop it. That's wrong too. That's the corollary. That's wrong too. It's more, you know, let me figure out why those didn't work. Let me figure out what was wrong with that in the past. Because it's like, wow, there's 300 examples of where I can get valuable information without anyone knowing. It's the same thing as an entrepreneur who all of a sudden discovers there's a new competitor out there and they get discouraged. And it's like, there's a new competitor out there. That's a gift. Now they, because on their website, they're going to tell you everything that they're doing, right? And you can now improve on it. But unfortunately, a lot of folks just have a blind eye, and sometimes on purpose. They just don't want to hear it because they want to move forward and with the confidence, like I said. And it's only when it's too late that they're going to find out. So that's just a warning for them.
Oh my goodness. Well, number eight. And I'm going to put a disclaimer here. This is my own personal thing. This is for business. And this is actually going back to the eight rules of dating my daughter. This is for life, personal life, business, everything. Number eight, please tell me if you're dating other people.
Yeah, I tried to change a lot of words for modern political correctness. But yeah, this started out with dating your advisor, because a lot of times engaging with, an investor or a mentor, because it's supposed to be a long-term relationship, has a lot of corollaries or analogies to dating. But let's keep it nice. So when you have a mentor or advisor, just let them know that you're talking to other folks, getting advice. I mean, in an official way. I don't mean just picking up the phone. Because again, there's few things more annoying than an entrepreneur that's shopping around for advice. Because what it means is that you're looking for either surveying the best advice, which is not a good idea, or you're shopping around for someone to tell you what you want to hear.
Right.
Not what you need to hear. And, you know, either way, you know, because I need to know if you're getting bad advice so I can say something about it, or so I have the choice to let you go on your way because you're going to listen to your uncle more than you're going to listen to me.
Makes sense. It really does. And that is, I can tell in your illustrious career of mentoring and being an entrepreneur and working with the ACA and all those things, you've had a lot of people come to you and say, well, my cousin's friend's brother, sister says this. And you're like, great. What does that have to do with me?
Well, I think an even more common, more and more common is, you know, there are entrepreneurs who attend multiple accelerator programs,
right?
Which is interesting to me because one should be enough, in my opinion. But then they come out and say, well, I learned this in this accelerator program. It's a little different now. And then I have to either spend time clarifying, countering, or contradicting. And that's not bad. It's not bad as long as I know that. If I don't, and you have set in your mind something that you think you've learned, and I'm fighting an uphill battle. And no mentor wants to waste their time because mentors don't get paid. Mentors do this for a lot of other reasons. So just keep in mind, we don't want to waste our time. We're making a decision to spend our time with you. So these are tips to, you know, to make sure that we don't waste our time.
So that authenticity and that transparency is critical for that relationship.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Number nine. We're not going all the way on the first date.
Okay. So there's so many that I'll get introduced to. And I want some mentoring. I don't know what that means exactly. I want some mentoring. It's like saying I only want an hour of dating. Actually, I do know what that means. If somebody says that. the ultimate goal is your success as an entrepreneur, but there are other goals in a way. Okay, so you might want me to be on your advisory board. You might want me to make an introduction to an investor. You might want me to do something more than being a mentor or invest myself. All, you know, in the realm of possibilities, but not in the first meeting. All right. And, you know, it's not going to happen in the first meeting that we have an hour and then I say, okay, I'll sit on your advisory board. Or, you know, sure, I'll introduce you to somebody that I've known for 30 years and or some celebrity contact and introduce them to somebody that I've known for an hour. It's not going to happen. And to have those expectations, or worse, is to ask me, it is a little presumptuous, because it also makes it seem like you have an ulterior motive that I didn't know about. And that's not a good foot to step off on in
right.
a relationship.
Right. But is it okay if, you know, an entrepreneur founder knows that they've done their research and they do have specific things that they're looking for from you, your specific expertise? Is it okay to be bold enough to say, hey, Dr. Cornell, I'm sitting down with you because I know you're an expert in this, this, and this. And these are the things I really want to focus on with my time with you, if you're willing. Is that okay?
Oh, it's more than okay. It's actually perfect. And in fact, I point that out in the upcoming book, is that these days, and I'll take a digression for about 30 seconds here.
Yes.
So entrepreneurship used to be pretty casual. You know, 20 years ago, 10 to 12 years ago, you know, you were a dynamic person with a great idea, some skills or capability. You know, you dove in, you started a company. But then we started to have framework, like the business model canvas or the lean startup. Methodologies for teaching it. And, you know, it may seem a little contrived, but it's not. There's a framework for those to follow. And for the past 10, 12 years, particularly in accelerators, universities, we followed them. Well, mentorship used to be pretty casual as well. You know, you met somebody, you were introduced to somebody, you'd sit down and have coffee, and then the relationship developed. But today, it's evolved to the point where there needs to be some framework and methodology behind it. It doesn't have to be that formal, but yes, to come in and say, look, and agree even, to say, look, here are the 5 or 10 things that I would love to improve about myself as an entrepreneur or about my company. And I'll make a statement here, just so for the sake of people here. Mentors focus on the founder. Advisors focus on the company.
Okay. Thank you for clarification on that. Yes.
And there are some hybrids in between, particularly if there's a mentor coach that works for an accelerator, then there's a curriculum. But again, it's still supposed to be about the founder's journey for the mentor in that case. And that doesn't happen in one sitting. There's no miracle workers. You don't walk out of a meeting with a mentor transformed. Sometimes you do when you're inspired by somebody, but it takes time. And to go in and say, here are the things I think I need to work on. I want to get better at motivating people. I want to get better at articulating my idea. I know that there's a lot of things in about entrepreneurship and raising money that I don't know about, which is, by the way, a really tough admission for most entrepreneurs to say,
right.
They like to pretend they know. And you say, okay. And then the mentor may tweak it a little bit, saying, well, I also see these things. And now we have a priority to work on. Then the mentor can say, okay, between now and the next time we meet, do these 3 things. Just focus on these 3 things. And then we'll come back and meet. And that sounds like a methodology, if you will. It is. And because methodology one is when you meet, start talking about the 10 objectives that you have. All right. So it's actually very good. It's actually a great sign of an entrepreneur who's self-aware enough to know that they have things to work on. They want to get better at. And yes, of course, that path. You know, there's usually only 1 or 2 paths that an entrepreneur wants in the beginning. You know, funding,
right.
funding, revenues, and maybe some other goals that are short of that. But there's really only 2 of those. And revenues, I think, you know, or customers who will give them revenue, right? And so everything else is sort of secondary to that. So yes, it's pretty obvious that every entrepreneur wants those things, but you have to do. You have to know and you have to be certain things in order to get the funding and the customers. And if you're self-aware enough to know what that is that you're lacking in the beginning, wow, that's great. If you're not, let the mentor help you be self-aware enough, all right? Is, you know, in hearing your story, the mentor can say, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to start doing podcasts to talk about your venture and to articulate what it is, right? I want you to start visiting this company or talking to these people. You know, he or she can give you little assignments like that and maybe give you the benefit of things that they've learned. But I caution about that part because there's far too many mentors who will reminisce about their careers and say, here's what I did, with the implication you should do the same thing. Remember, mentors are not perfect either.
Right.
And entrepreneurs need a little bit of filter for that, of that nostalgia. But anyway, the lesson here, though, is that the mentor-mentee relationship is not a one-time thing. It's going to take an evolution. It's going to take time. And you should understand that.
So let me ask you a question that I think maybe some of our viewers and listeners might want to ask, but may not have the right person to ask or may not have the bravery to ask. Is it okay if you find someone, let's say, of your caliber that has done so many things, and I get an audience with you and you give me advice or you give me homework? Is it okay? Is it appropriate? And is there a certain way to say, I don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I want to go down that path, barring that you're not just, don't tell me my baby is ugly. Like this is, you're doing your research, you're open, you're listening, but there is something that is missing in the connection. And as the founder, you almost sometimes feel powerless because you're like, this person is holding the future of my baby in their hands. So tell me, if you've ever come across situations like that, and what's the best way to have that conversation?
Oh, well, of course, it happens all the time. And there are two main mentor entry points, if you will. It's the one-on-one mentor. In other words, somebody you meet, and then eventually you decide together that, okay, let's go on this journey together. I can help you. It doesn't happen that way that often, like that methodically. It should, and I want it to in the future. The other way is if you're assigned a mentor as part of some program. Either way, it should start with an establishment of trust and respect for each other. You know, there are actually proteges, what we call them, founders that I've worked with who are a real mess. I'm not sure I exactly respect them, but I want to help them because I feel that maybe either I used to be like that and I wanted somebody, or there by the grace of God come in. If somebody doesn't help this person, right? But they need to be ready. And that takes a little bit of time to establish that. You're right. Entrepreneurs are not good at vetting who's a good mentor or even a good advisor. They look at a credential. Or when I say a credential, okay, so-and-so came from Microsoft's AI department or something. Well, that's good, but it may not be what you think it is. I mean, you know, that person may be a deep scientist, but not good at explaining it to other people and so on and so forth. Or if it's part of an organization, and this is another problem that I'm hoping to, you know, impact, organizations are notoriously bad at vetting mentors that they sign up for their organization. They're very bad at it because they look at credentials. They want 100 mentors. I don't know why they go for quantity over quality, but they want 100 mentors on their roster. And they look at people who apparently are successful, small business people, successful executives. But the simple fact is just because you were successful in that field doesn't mean you're a successful mentor. And I'll say this one for the record. This is talking to the mentors, but entrepreneurs listen, is let's say that you are a great doctor, a great cardiologist, okay? And you know that over 500,000 people per year die of heart disease, okay? And that's more than COVID or any of that stuff. 500,000 per year, that's just in the United States. But you have the cure. If you tell people to exercise and eat right, you can reduce that by 90%. So you type out on a blog or even a tweet, exercise and eat right, and you will not get heart disease. Your job is done, right? No. Because it's not going to happen unless you have the wherewithal to get people to actually take your advice. All right. And so if you're an expert at something or experienced and you want to be a mentor, it doesn't mean you're going to be a good mentor. All right. The judgment of a good mentor is who takes your advice and then what the result of that is. And that is a new skill set. So the point is that just because someone's experienced, an expert, right, has credentials, doesn't mean that they're going to be good at mentoring somebody and imparting that advice and getting them to take action. Right? That takes time and experience. I think programs are double-edged. They're bad at vetting, but they are helpful in providing those guidelines and guide rails. So it's a double-edged. And so there's no great answer of how does an entrepreneur know, except you should indeed vet the mentor a little bit. You know, maybe not directly ask, although it's a good thing, but look up. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody who's experienced today, you can look up their background. You can see if they've mentored anyone else. Frankly, and I know it may sound unfair, but if someone's really good at mentoring, whether deliberately or not, on their LinkedIn page, there's going to be people saying so. Right.
True.
Or, you know, there's going to be people who are saying, yeah, you know, I knew that guy in the comments. So, and, you know, if you're dealing with a mentor these days that is not active in social media, you know, they may be more of a role model, but maybe not a mentor. I know it sounds unfair, but it seems to be the new normal. So anyway, those are a couple of ways.
First of all, that is a nugget of wisdom that I hope people really take away. And we're not here to bash anybody, right? Everybody brings different skill sets to the table. And I really think, because I, running the incubator that I run, I do come into situations where people cold call me, they reach out to me and they say, I want to be a mentor. Well, I personally vet every mentor that comes into my program. Not only do I vet them, in a sense, I become one of their founders. We have this conversation and they don't realize I'm asking them questions that founders would ask. I want to see what they bring to the table. And then I ask them if they would be willing to do a workshop. That's one of the biggest things I do all the time is when I have a new mentor come aboard, I'm like, hey, are you willing to do an hour workshop, a lunch and learn, a speaker series, just to see how they handle that kind of an audience? What are they giving? How are they impactful? And you know, barring me making them jump through hoops of fire, that's the best way that I could find of figuring out not only who brings something to the table, but who fits our incubator culture. We have a culture, right? So everything made me laugh. Everything gave me joy and gave me a lesson, but that should resound with everyone, I think.
Well, I think, and for those who are watching this on video, you may have seen looking down, I was writing down because I'm just learning something from Diana, which is actually very valuable, which I will point out in just a moment, is that programs having a criteria to vet against is actually very helpful for both the program and the prospective mentor.
Right.
So, and a lot of the incubators, accelerators, and programs, entrepreneurship programs, may have de facto criteria. Let's say, well, we need mentors in law. Which is, again, that's an advisor, but let's just say mentors experience in law, patents, IP. And that's fair to say you want experience in it, but that's not exactly what they should be mentoring in. But the point is that in becoming their, I like that, you're becoming their founder in vetting them. You know, here's the thing that mentors or prospective mentors, again, should understand. It's an extra skill set. In other words, you could be an experienced, an expert, but now you need to flex another muscle. It's just like you saying to me, I'm experienced, I'm expert, and now I want the world to know me as a thought leader. Well, my next statement is going to be, well, you're going to have to be good at social media. You're going to have to learn. It's not enough to just know what you're talking about. You have to know how to write, present, and be good in social media. No one would really question that. But if somebody says, I want to be a mentor now, you know, how hard can it be, right? Of course. But it is something where you need to learn or at least have guidelines for. And so when you're doing the criteria for a program, certainly you can say, well, look, for our program, you need to have been a mentor for some accelerator once before. We need to know the names of a couple of folks. Now, for executives and experts, and I used to being questioned like that and having to prove, but if you want to up the game, right, that's what you got to do. Because frankly, on the other side of that wall, when you become a mentor and you get better at it, you want, it's just the nature of being an expert, you want recognition that you're better at it than some of the others. Well, there's no criteria. How are you going to know, right?
It's true.
If you're placed in the same group as someone who's got 10 minutes experience versus 10 years. And so it's actually important, not just for the founders, but for your future mentors as well. Because if you're not vetting and you're just accepting anybody, well, it's like, I don't know if I feel good about that, about being involved with that. And so that affects the overall quality too.
I agree. So last lesson, another chuckle, I'm sorry. Promise me you'll call me in the morning.
Yeah. And so this is go back to not about the entrepreneur, but about the mentor. Again, mentors don't get paid. The corollary to a paid mentor is called the coach. And that's fine if you want to be held accountable like that. And coaches are good at what they do. It's just a different purpose, different reason. And frankly, usually more experienced entrepreneurs who are very more self-aware will go get a coach and pay for one. But mentors do it for a lot of reasons, but mainly they say they want to give back. But it's also for a lot of it. They want to see the impact of what they do. Forget about giving back. You know, they want to know, well, if I'm giving advice, is it helping? Maybe I can get better at it. I can't do that without feedback from you. Right. And I want to know, or else there's no motivation. I actually wanted something from the entrepreneur. I wanted to interview him for something else I'm doing. And he said, okay, I'll tell you about this subject for an hour of mentoring. And I thought to myself, there's no such thing as an hour of mentoring. It doesn't work like that. It's like saying you're a black belt and give me an hour lesson so I can go beat up the bully. No, it doesn't work like that. It takes practice. It takes time, right? And so, you know, what we want is if you don't like the mentor or if they gave the bad advice, sure, go on your way, right? But if they gave you something useful or something. Like, let's say, okay, there have been times where I've given an entrepreneur some advice about what to say, how to act in a private meeting with a venture capitalist. Well, certainly I want to know how it all turned out.
Right.
And maybe he tells me, oh, yeah, I forgot this part. Or you know what? He said what you said he was going to say, and I was ready for it. That's great to hear. But other times it's like, no, he blindsided me. He said this. That's good for me to know as well. And then we could talk about it and go to the next step. But that feedback is very important for a mentor. And, you know, if it's just one off, if I hear from you again in 6 months because you're out of money, I don't know if I have the motivation to talk further. And so it's just human nature, but just realize that the mentors are human and they want feedback. They want to know that they've helped, or they want to know if something didn't go according to plan.
Let me tell you, I love the lessons, AKA rules. I cannot wait for your next book. If it's anything like what we discussed today, I'm going to have a blast reading that book, I tell you.
Yeah, the book is called The Startup Brain Trust, and it's both for the mentors and for the entrepreneurs. Some of it's fun. The other parts are all, there's now a little bit of a framework, so it's a little less casual approach about mentoring, and hopefully a little bit of a handbook and for programs too. And as I like to say, you know, starting in May, if you go to any of the fine bookstores in town and ask them where the other books are sold, they'll tell you where the Brain Trust will be. No, it'll be on Amazon starting in May.
I love it. Well, I have a last question for you. What have you had to unlearn?
Good question. Give me a few seconds to pause on that one.
You've got it.
Okay. This is a weird one. I think you saw you read in my introduction, I spent a great deal of time. Now, I started off as an introvert, I mean, a real great introvert. And then I guess as a solution to that is I started performing stand-up comedy and magic, actually put myself through school doing that. And that takes a lot of extrovertedness, if you will, being able to speak in public. And that was a great skill. It actually had buoyed me in several different situations, just the ability to be comfortable like that. But I think sometimes that comes at the expense of listening skills. And, you know, because being able to articulate and knowing what to say, that's a learned skill and it's a good one. But I think I've had to unlearn that a little bit to be a better listener, particularly as a mentor, to be a better listener, despite that there are times that I think I know exactly what to say. Going back to what I said is I realize it doesn't matter if you know exactly what to say. If the other person isn't ready for it, right, then it's not going to matter. And you'll just be pleased with yourself for saying it. But and so that part comes from unlearning being articulate and learning to be a better listener first. And I find, like a lot of people, try to work very hard on that to become a better listener, because speaking became a little easier. And, you know, really listening to not just the words you're saying, but what they really are trying to tell you. And that I really admire people who can do that. And I had to unlearn public speaking, if you will, and being able to articulate saying that perfect thing, because it's somewhat incompatible with being a really good listener.
It's so true. I never thought of it that way, because I too had to teach myself as an introvert, right? You can't be an introvert in sales. It doesn't work, right? And so learning how to get out of my own head, but still listen for comprehension. Yeah, it's not an easy task.
I'll add to that something you said at the very beginning, I believe, which was it's not just about listening to the word. It's about watching the body language. You know, I've seen so many people talking to somebody and you could clearly see the listener discomfort. Whether they're uncomfortable or just not listening at all. And the speaker, the person talking, is oblivious. They don't see that the other person is not wanting to have the conversation or not believing them. But it's amazing what you watch, that when you're listening, if you will, for that part of the conversation, how much you can learn. But if you're intent on being the good speaker, you miss a lot of that. So I had to unlearn that part.
Oh, fabulous. Well, thank you for this. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. CJ Cornell, for joining us today and providing some wonderful lessons. CJ, tell us about your blog. Where can we find your blog?
It is at cjcornell.com or cjcornell.net. Or if you just type in CJ Cornell in Google, I'm sure you'll find it. And I post two things on there. Actually a lot. There's a lot of resources on the blog, links for entrepreneurs. I write new articles a couple of times a week, but I also curate. I have a newsletter that you can sign up for where it simply is some of the better links that I found having to do with entrepreneurship, fundraising, crowdfunding, and different aspects of entrepreneurship on there. And it's all there in one place. And you can learn a little bit about me and how to contact me. I always will return an email for people who want to ask me something or so. And we try to do that. We may not have 20 conversations, but we'll certainly have one or two.
And I can actually contest to that. That is true. Well, everyone, you've been listening to 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, sponsored by the Professional Development Forum. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, parties, and it's all free. Visit professionaldevelopmentforum.org to learn more. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to 10 Lessons. We also appreciate your feedback, so follow us on social media and engage. Thanks again, everybody. And thank you, CJ.
You. It's been a pleasure.